Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to Let's Talk, the show that brings you the most important conversations of the day. Yesterday, we had the coronation of the Sultan of Kedah, an immense spectacle. If you missed it, we're going to be showing you clips from that. We are going to also be talking and drilling down on the issues around the Malay rulers. And to help me with that, I have as my co-host today, Rizal Zulkifli. He, of course, is a senior journalist with Astro Awani, and also our guest tonight, Syed Hussein Ali. He's the author of The Malay Rulers, Regression or Reform. He is, of course, a well-known political activist and sociologist. So we're going to be bringing all that to you. But if you miss the spectacle that was the coronation in Kedah yesterday, here's a bit of that.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Dengan izin Allah Subhanahu wa taala, maka kebawah duli Yang Maha Mulia Sultan Salahuddin Ibni Almarhum Sultan Badlishah telah ditabalkan sebagai Sultan Negeri Kedah Darul Aman yang ke-29 dengan gelaran Kebawah Duli Yang Maha Mulia Al-Aminul Karim Sultan Salahuddin Ibni Almarhum Sultan Badlishah. Daulat Tuanku.
And that was the coronation in Kedah that the media really spent a lot of time on, an amazing spectacle. We're also going to be speaking to a historian tonight, Professor Kopkwa Suwanatha Pien. She is the author of Palace, Political Party and Power, a story of the socio-political development of Malay kingship. So that's all in the mix tonight. And we go to my studio guest today, Syed Hussein Ali. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, Rizal, thank you for sharing this show with me. I'm very excited by it. The spectacle, that's something that, you know, that I think impresses a lot of people. But the question is, today, today's Malaysia, who is watching the spectacle?
Well, I think there are a lot of people who are interested in it, especially the Malays, you know. It's very full of ceremony and full of things to see.
Right, it's pageantry. Yeah,
pageantry and all that.
Yeah.
So I think people are upholding, actually, the rulers. And whatever the rulers do, they will also follow. And this is both something good, that is something good, and also, I think, something bad, which I'll talk about later.
Okay, we're going to come back to some of your criticisms. Rizal, I mean, as a young person, perhaps, you know, I mean, you can sort of fill in the blanks for us. There's the media's full of a kind of love fest with royals, the British royals in particular, you know, Harry and Meghan, their wedding, their first child. Is that, do you think, a lot of people your generation are attracted to?
I was in the UK when that happened, and there was a lot of criticism towards that affinity towards, or even watching the both of them got their wedding, Harry and Meghan. So we had a conversation the day after, and people were like, "Oh, did you actually watch that? You know why?" But you know, but it was just all not very nice. You know, people did not take that very well, especially in the UK when there were other things to focus on. Say, Brexit was happening, there was a lot of inequality happening in the UK. So when I said that I wanted to watch that, so I had to do that secretly, so that people did not call me out. But it was all good for TV. It was good TV.
Okay, good
TV. And it was good TV, and we spent I think spent half a day watching that. And the build-up was also done very well. So a lot of people actually cash in, the Marks and Spencers. So they actually produce memorabilia, all these gifts and souvenirs commemorating the wedding, the royal wedding. So there was a lot of economic benefits to that, and there was also the good for TV element.
Okay, so some of the justifications seem to be around things like tourism, at least for the British royals.
Yes,
that
yes.
seems to be a big issue. Syed, you know, you're a veteran, if I can say it that way, and you've been around for some time. Do you feel that on a personal level, that people's feelings towards royals as a whole or their particular state has changed over time.
Yes, of course. Of course. And I'm surprised, for instance, that people who were at one time very much anti-rulers, anti-royalty, change now to being pro-royalty. Now, for instance, in the 50s and 60s, especially the 70s, you had the rising, the growth of this middle class, both politicians and professionals. Now, these people were at that time having some conflict with the royalty, because they were competing for the same things economically. Mm-hmm. Now, the rulers want let's say timber land. So too with some of the politicians. Mm-hmm. So they came into conflict, and at one stage, the UMNO leaders were very against the rulers. So you had problems in Perak, in Perlis, in Terengganu, and later, of course, in Pahang, which was the worst part of it. And in these days, the leaders of UMNO, who were also Menteri Besar, were very much against their own rulers. Mm-hmm. Now, but now, of course, you see a change that UMNO leaders are beginning to be the ones who are promoting the rulers and supporting their position. And this is because they are using the Sultan, the religion, as well as language, you know, as vehicles for getting support for themselves.
But there's also a question of culture, isn't there, Rizal? I mean, and your identity, especially if you're, I think you're Malay and from the peninsula, because Sabah and Sarawak don't have traditional rulers. Sarawak, I guess, had before, but they were British.
Or even Melaka, for instance.
Melaka and Penang don't have as well. So, you know, do you think in your generation feel a connection with the royal house as part of your kind of cultural identity?
But there is a historical significance. I think if you look at the Kedah, the Sultan of Kedah, there's a long lineage of one person becoming a sultan one after the other from the 1100, it's a long lineage. Yeah. If you look at that, you see the historical significance, and you see the rebirth of this institution after the passing of one sultan. The next sultan would be installed as a new sultan of the people. So you see the ceremonies, this pomp and grandeur as a rebirth of this institution, and somehow you feel connected to them. Well, I feel connected to them. I've witnessed and I've anchored a program for the installation of the Sultan of Perak in 2015. And it was quite an event to be part of.
Well, are you from Perak?
I am from Perak, and I felt quite honored to be part of that occasion. So I think there is this searching for how that institution can also be part of my life and also be part of my existence in a historical belonging, sense of belonging.
There is something psychological that. I mean, sociological and historical also to explain this. You know, now sociologically, of course, you have a situation where at the beginning, and even now, the system of royalty being related to the structure of feudalism. Mm-hmm. Now, in this structure, you have not only in the past a control by the rulers in the economic, political, as well as security fields, but also a control over the minds of the people. You see, the people are supposed to look at the rulers as having supernatural power, a daulat, and to go against a ruler will be derhaka, you know? Derhaka, which is about the treason. And if you are going to support the ruler for whatever he is asking you to do, then you agree by saying that. Menjunjung duli. Menjunjung duli. Duli, you know what duli is? Duli is a foot. Mm. So in other words, you carry the ruler's foot on your head. And
so do these things still have salience today, though?
Yes, I think they are still the language is still being used, and I think people take it seriously. Some people, you know, like for instance, you have a situation where you say that the ruler has you cannot deraka, huh? You have to sembah, angkat sembah to the ruler, eh? And this angkat sembah is not just putting your hands on the forehead, but in some areas, in some states, you sit and you move on your buttock, you know, and as you go along, you keep on sembahing.
Right.
And of course, what is worse is that when you refer to yourself to a ruler, you use the word pate. The pate is the first person. And I think not many people know what pate really means in Malay.
And what does it mean?
It means either slave or dog.
Oh, well,
so
okay.
In other words, you're referring to yourself as a dog or a slave without knowing what the meaning of pate is.
Okay, we're going to have to hold this conversation. We're going to come back because there are issues around the question of culture and to what extent this is culture, and we have to read it as that. But we're going to be taking a short break. I've been speaking to Syed Hussein Ali. He's the author of The Malay Ruler's Regression or Reform, and also with me, Rizal Zulkapli, with Astro One. He's a well-known face here. We'll be back shortly. This is Let's Talk with me, Sharad Pitton.
The Kedah Sultanate is one of the oldest in the world, with the reputation of possessing the longest unbroken lineage. Stretching over 876 years, there is no other dynasty or existing reigning monarch that boasts such a long ancestral link dating back many centuries. According to historians, the Kedah royal lineage stretches far longer than the British, Japanese, and Thai monarchies. Although United Kingdom's Queen Elizabeth II is among the longest-serving monarch in the world at 60 years, the kings of England, Wales, Scotland and Ireland, who ruled the kingdom over a period stretching 1,255 years, do not share the same royal family tree. Japan was ruled by 9 different royal families, among them the Kofun, Asuka, Nara, Heian, Kamakura, the Northern Court Group, Muromachi, and Azuchi Momoyama. The current ruler is from the Edo family that has reigned for 409 years from 1603 AD. Various dynasties had ruled Siam under the Kingdom of Sukhothai, Kingdom of Ayutthaya, the Kingdom of Thonburi, and the Kingdom of Ratanakosin. On Monday, Sultan Salahuddin Ibni Almarhum Sultan Badli Shah was installed as the 29th Sultan of Kedah. The installation ceremony, attended by eminent guests, took place at the Balairong Seri of Istana Anak Bukit in Alostar, Kedah. The ceremony was held in the full tradition and custom of the Kedah Malay Sultanate. It was a historic ceremony considering that the last installation was held almost 6 decades ago in 1959, when Sultan Abdul Halim Muazzam Shah Ibni Almarhum Sultan Badli Shah ascended to the Kedah throne. Born on April 30, 1942, Sultan Salahuddin is the 9th of the 14 children of Sultan Badli Shah Sultan Abdul Hamid Shah, who had ruled Kedah from 1943 to 1958. Sultan Salahuddin and Sultana Maliha are blessed with 2 children, Datuk Tunku Sarafuddin Badli Shah and Datuk Tunku Shazuddin Arif.
Tuhanku yang berkuasa, yang mengurniakan balasan pahala kepada mereka.
That was a clip essentially explaining the Kedah Royal House. I'm Sharad Pitton. With me, Rizal Zulkapli. Stumbling on your name. And of course, Syed Hussein Ali, author of The Malay Ruler's Regression or Reform. We ended with a rather contentious issue about what pate means, that is the first person pronoun, that's used in that feudal relationship. And I wonder if they're competing notions and codes that involve here. If it's true that within the field thing you have to degrade yourself,
But we also have in modern times the notion of citizenship that makes everybody equal. We have the system of sultanates that are particular to certain states, but we also have the agong, which is a position that is supranational, right? And so basically, people of Sabah, Sarawak, Penang, and Malacca also enjoy, in some ways, a kind of royal personage at the head of their state. So how do we make sense of all these different things?
Well, I mentioned just now about changes that are taking place. Mm-hmm. For instance, you have the weakening of the feudal system, and then the strengthening of so-called modernization processes. And these things, of course, also change the attitudes of people towards the rulers. But on the other hand, you know, now, compared to the olden days, the olden days you had the ruler being head of the people, also controlling the economy, controlling politics and security. But of course, economy, politics and security now are taken over by a lot of others, yeah. And leaving only the ruler as a symbol, and having power only on religion and customs. So his power is really reduced and he has become a symbol. But I think psychologically, people are still, you know, holding the rulers as if he is, you know, quite supernatural, having the daulat. But there is a difference.
You can have this dual existence as a citizen of the nation, of the state, and also this feudal relationship with your ruler.
That's right.
How does one balance that? How do you progress with that? Because as a modern person, you would be like, you know, my relationship with you is defined by how I equate myself with your position. If we are on the same ground, we can have good discussions.
We should all be equal before the law, yes. For instance. I mean, these are very powerful notions, right?
No, despite the fact that the Constitution asserts that you are all equal before the law, yet, until 1993, rulers could not be brought to court. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And the other thing is that you have a situation where the Malays, especially, you know, regard the Sultan not just as a symbol, but also as an important figure representing what they conceive to be Malay sovereignty, mm-hmm. Kedaulatan. Mm-hmm. Melayu, Kedaulatan Melayu or Ketuanan Melayu. Now, Ketuanan Melayu, of course, makes them feel that, you know, without the ruler, you can't have, in this so-called multiracial country, the Malays being regarded as a little higher than the others. So that is one. And the other thing, of course, some of these rulers, you know, I can say quite straightforwardly, are very unreasonable. You know, they don't keep time.
And you saw that on full display during the investiture of the new government.
That's, you know, the only one. For instance, going to the mosque, you know, on Friday, you have the time to start the prayer, but sometimes they come late, and people get angry. So, in other words, on one hand, you look up the ruler as somebody whom you have to know more than just respect. But on the other hand, you are angry with him because, you know, this is Friday prayer and you have to wait so long.
But can we disassociate the foibles or the failings of individuals and the institution? And is it something that we need to do? Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, coming back to Rizal, you know, do you feel that Syed's political reading of the royals is something that you could are persuaded by? Or do you think there's something there that's still important for you culturally?
It, of course, it's something important for me culturally, but it's also something for me to consider because in a modern relationship that I have with people around me, I need to know what I get from that relationship and how it will benefit me as a person. So when I read all the speeches by some rulers and when I look at their position and how they try to assert their position, in this modern world, I see some individuals, they try to maintain the institutions that they represent very well, and they work hard for it. Some individuals may not have very positive attributes. So it's back to that question of institution versus the individuals, mm-hmm. because we see individuals on a regular basis on TV especially, but the institution itself has to be, I guess, to a certain extent, revered and has to be respected for what it represents, because it's an institution.
I mean, yeah. Syed, you know, you were saying earlier that people's attitudes have changed. Have your attitudes changed over the course of your life towards the institution?
I must admit that I have less faith on the feudal system, you know, mm-hmm. than ever before. And, you know, but
and where does it come from? I mean, historically, where does that come from?
I think my education and also my observation of what things are, you know, mm-hmm. and especially in the case of rulers who want, let's take, for example, the Pahang case before, when the ruler wanted to have 30,000 acres of timberland. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, you know, he wanted that money not long after the MB came to office, Rahim Bakar at the time. The MB refused to give this land because it says it should be, it should bid for it, you know, together with others. Now, the ruler went to Hussein On. Hussein On refused to agree with Sultan, but on the other hand, supported the MB. And it was only when Mahathir came after Hussein On that the MB was removed, and the Sultan got his land. Now, immediately he sold it to a Chinese. He needed the money because unfortunately again, he was a great gambler and he lost a lot and he wanted to pay. Now, this shows one thing, you know, as you mentioned earlier, there are people who can gain out of their relationship with the Sultan. The ordinary Malay who looks up to the ruler may not gain anything. But some of the big Taukes, they feel that they can gain something. They don't want the rulers to be removed. These are the source of the economic resources. Yeah?
Right.
And on the other hand, there are also Malays, non-Malays, Chinese, who feel that, now look, if the Malays become too radical and become anti-ruler, then they will turn to be anti-capitalism too. Mm-hmm. And if they turn anti-capitalism, then they'll be anti-Chinese too. So you have this group of Chinese who may want the rulers to remain, just as the Malays want the ruler to remain for Ketuanan Melayu.
And this is documented in your book. This is the argument you're making in your book. Yeah. Okay, we're going to be looking more closely at the book later on, but we're going to come back to speak to historian Kobkua Suwanat Pien. She is the author of Palace, Political Party and Power, A Story of Socio-Political Development of Malay Kingship. That's up next. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutin. On the line, we have historian Dr. Kobkua Suwanat Pien. She is the author of Palace, Political Party in Power, A Story of the Socio-Political Development of Malay Kingship. And, you know, we're asking her to help us understand the evolution of the system. Thank you so much, Dr. Kobkua, for joining us this evening. First question for you. The royal institution is a living institution responding to external, pressures and demands. What do you think is the main story, at least with Kedah? What story can we best understand about this trajectory, and a very long trajectory it is, for the Kedah Sultanate?
Good evening. The question about Kedah, I would think, is, like you said, it's a wrong story. But as far as the kingship in Kedah is concerned, as we know, it's the longest and the oldest ruling house in Malaysia. And more important, it's only ruled by one dynasty throughout, from the beginning until the present day. And in terms of the role and the influence of the monarchy in Kedah, I would say that it's one of the most popular and loved ruling house in the country. And this could be seen, as you have shown yourself, in the all these the ceremonies and the happy occasion that have something to do with the rulers and the royal family.
Dr. Kopkwa, do you think that when we talk about the royal as a collective, that we're kind of missing the point that we need to look at individual state-based houses and to look at those stories as specific to the context that they exist in? Or can we actually talk about the royals in terms of large categories like the feudal system, for instance, and the move from a feudal structure for society to a modern one?
It is very difficult to talk about the social development of kingship on the society. When you talk about feudalism, lots of us would say now, even in Malaysia today, feudalism is quite still influential in our way of life, in our value, social and political value. And just to say that it's in Kedah, which is you want me to say, it's a very difficult question. You have to be more specific than that.
Right. Okay, I want to refer to your book where you make the argument that after the 2008 general election, when UMNO was weakened, it actually led to some royal houses asserting themselves or reinventing themselves. Can you tell us about a little bit about the process? What does it mean for a royal house to reinvent itself?
Well, before 2008, I think we have to go back. The best way to go back is the premiership of Tun Mahathir. The 22 years of his premiership, the first one, had been the time which is, we could say, the time that the monarchy or the rulership of Malaysia felt most threatened, because Dr. Mahathir was able to pass a constitutional amendment that taken away the immunity of the rulers in private affairs. And this happened because of the old traditional ways that the rulers in Malaysia behave and their lifestyle and how they conduct themselves, which mainly sometimes is very selfish. This is very self-indulgent, and most cases is decadent. And because of this, Dr. Mahathir was able to manage to bring about some kind of reform or control over the rulership in Malaysia. And therefore, we have to go back to this to understand what I said in 2008. Dr. Mahathir premiership in 2003. And after 2003, there is a kind of relaxation from the central to the state. And the rulers respond to this in the most vocal manner. So the rulers begin to participate in the affair of the state without feeling apprehension is the word, I think, of the rest, the reaction from the central government. So from 2003-2008, the 2008 was the election that we come to. And the election, the result of the election bring about or exhibit the weaknesses of the UMNO ruling party.
And Dr. Kokwa?
Yes?
Sorry. Now that Dr. Mahathir is back in power, 10 years after 2008, now that some of the rulers are enjoying their position in the society, some rulers are enjoying their reinvention and also their position with regards to having a very strong social media presence and a very popular following with the young people. How will this come into play with the development that has happened since 2008?
Well, we could say in short that I think most rulers will be more careful of what they say or what they do in terms of criticizing the government or participating in the policy making or in any other activities, more socio-political activity than before. I would say that they, on a whole, would behave in a more with more discretion than before. I don't think you would hear any ruler would come out and start criticizing the government or any action taken by the government, central government, the way that we have seen or getting used to for the last 10 years, I would say.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kokwa, for joining us this evening. That was Dr. Kokwa Suwanathapien. She is the author of Palace, Political Party and Power, A Story of the Social Political Development of Malay Kingship. We're going to be back with a look at this tussle between politicians and royal houses and what the consequence is for the larger public good. Stay tuned to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Putin. Welcome back. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is Let's Talk with me, Rizal Zulkapli. He is a well-known feature of Astro Wani. And our special guest, Syed Hussein Ali, author of The Malay Rulers, Regression or Reform. And that's something that Dr. Pien just now was talking about, the question of the reinvention of the royals and the possibility of reform. And because Dr. Mahathir was ahead of the curve in some ways in the 80s to push along reform and centralizing power with politicians. Is this, do you think, going to be an endless tussle between royals and politicians for control? Because ultimately it's about resources, as you suggested.
I think the tussle may continue for quite some time. In 1983, you had a situation when Mahathir wanted to remove the right of rulers to endorse a bill passed by Parliament. Right. Without the endorsement, mm-hmm. it won't be a law. Okay? But Mahathir could not get all he wanted. Mm-hmm. So he had to change a bit. He changed by saying that, now look, anything passed by Parliament will go to the ruler. If within 1 month the ruler returns it to, if the ruler returns it to Parliament, Parliament will have to discuss again and then send it back to the ruler, and within 1 month it will become law.
Regardless of the objections of the ruler. Okay.
In 1993, of course, a resolution was passed in Parliament against the Sultan of Johor. Mm. And resulting from that, you have the setting up of the special court for rulers. Before that, you wouldn't be able to take any ruler to any court. Mm-hmm. And it was only after 1993 that this special court has been formed, but nobody has been taken to court for anything.
Sorry, if we could just spend a little bit of time on that particular history. Do you see that as the attempt by the executive to capture more and more control, diminishing balance, checks and balances within our system, rather than as a kind of move against feudalism?
No. It is certainly not a move against feudalism. Mm. It's because some of the politicians also behave as if they are feudal lords, you know. And in fact, with the coming up of this politicians and such like, you don't have the disappearance yet of feudalism. But what is important to say is that after 1993, for instance, you began to have rulers participating in economic in commercial enterprise. Mm-hmm. Now, the constitution does not allow for rulers to participate in commercial enterprise, mm-hmm. and they can also participate actively in politics. Now, after 93, after Mahathir, you have a situation where they were voicing more of their political views, mm-hmm. and also participating more in business enterprise. Mm-hmm. Look at Johor Bahru, for instance, mm-hmm. together with Iskandar.
Development. But is it because of the failure of politicians? When politicians failed, people actually look to royal houses, like the Johor yeah. Royal House,
yeah,
the kind of clear direction.
Can I maybe add something to that? After 2008, especially after 2008, 2013, so there was a clear move for the rulers to maybe voice out their grievances with regards to some politicians, with regards to how the governance was done in the country. How do you see that, after 1993, now the rulers are playing a bigger role in maybe saying to politicians, hey, you should stop doing this. I am here to provide check and balance to the system.
But the thing is this, some of the things that the rulers are doing are contravened the spirit of the constitution, like participating actively in business enterprise. They are doing quite a lot of it now, more than ever before, and they have gone so far. I don't think even Mahathir can stop it. You see, Mahathir can't stop what happens in Johor, for instance.
Right. So we have arguments like in the book Ampun Tuanku by Zaid Ibrahim, where he does make an argument that it's necessary to restrain the royal houses from being involved in politics, because that protects them ultimately by being avoiding the messiness of business and influence that will come with it. They actually preserve the institution, and that I think is largely the argument. But there was this other side to it, which is that they also, at least in the case of Johor, were articulating this idea of, Bangsa Johor, which was seen as something good. I mean, people were positive. They were very popular in that move. And how do you read that?
You see, we haven't evolved yet a national identity. Mm-hmm. The so-called Bangsa Malaysia is not there yet. But on the other hand, there is the feeling of importance of the ethnic identity, mm-hmm. and also identity of the state. Mm-hmm. Now, you attach your identity to the state sometimes more than to your national identity. And because of this, when you have a ruler speaking up for the state, mm-hmm. then I think there's a lot of ethicism for it. And
but is there something wrong? Is that something that...
I think it's not a good thing, mm-hmm. because it is more difficult to create national integration this way, mm-hmm. because you may have...
But can they exist, Bangsa Johor and Bangsa Malaysia, can't they exist in the same sphere?
Of course they can coexist, but in our situation now, we need more thrust into national identity, unless, of course, we don't want national identity.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so we have this very interesting kind of crossroads where Malaysia is, right? Under the previous administration, perhaps the country was pulling apart much more than it was previously. Sabah, mm-hmm. state rights, Sarawak state rights, Johor also pushing this idea mm-hmm. that it may, perhaps one day could be independent. I mean, mm-hmm. there was all these references to the constitution from the 19th century, for instance. Do you think that politicians have exhausted their goodwill with the populace, that in fact we can't go back to a time where you have leaders that can pull the country together in quite the same way as Dr. Mahathir did, good or bad, for 22 years?
Well, there is another aspect of things I think you have to look at, The situation now is one where the rulers are not fully accepted. Not fully accepted because, as I said just now, the historical conflict between them. The other thing is that you have a situation also where the rulers are regarded not as an important institution. Mm-hmm. More and more people are regarding it so, despite the fact that they are looked at as symbol of Ketuanan Melayu and all that. But because of certain demeanors, certain behavior of certain individuals among the royalty, that in itself reduces the respect for the royalty as an institution.
But aren't there individuals, I mean, royal individuals that are exemplary, that in fact especially the chattering middle classes, see as, you know, educated, articulate,
you see the,
and progressive?
Some rulers, by giving very good speeches, looking at the politicians and what they're doing, as I said earlier, providing a check and balance to the governance and looking after the welfare of the people. So I think some of these rulers are really looked up to by the people. But as Tuan Syed has mentioned, the individual and also the institution and individuals, these individuals are bringing the institution down with them. And it's not good for the majority of the small ruling population, I guess.
Right. Okay, we are going to have to take a short break and then we'll be back and maybe look at the position of royals with regard to the larger agenda of creating a democratic country. That's something that we're going to be coming back to shortly with my guest Syed Hussein Ali and also Rizal Zulkifli. Stay tuned. This is Let's Talk with me, Sharad Putin. Welcome back to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Putin. If you have your thoughts on this issue, you can always write to me at letstalk@astro.com.my or tweet me at Sharad Putin. Sorry, take this conversation further. With me in the room, Rizal Zulkifli, he is a well-known face on Astro Wani, and our special guest tonight, Syed Hussein Ali, a well-known sociologist, a political activist, former senator, also author of many, many books, social analysis, including one on the Malay rulers, entitled A Regression or Reform. Question about the future of the country. A lot of talk about us becoming genuinely democratic after decades of authoritarian rule. What role do you think the royals could possibly play in this agenda of democratic reform?
Well, you can regard them as a balancing factor in our process of modernization. But the only problem is that the distance between the rulers and the rakyat is so very great in our society. Now, it's quite different from, for instance, in the case of Holland or Denmark or Norway, you know, where the rulers, although they live in palaces, yet they can go around in buses or they cycle around. They're more with the people rather than way up there, you know, being sembah and with all the daulat and all that, you know. So I think...
Rizal, would you like to see, you know, your local princes and kings and sort of cycling about? I mean, do you think that would destroy the aura around, you know, royals?
I think they will be more respected because they feel the nadi of the rakyat, the pulse of the people. And they know what people are going through. So it's not just speaking from a high pedestal saying that X, Y, Z is not correct, you know, ABC should be done to correct the current issues. But if they really know what's happening down there, so they will know what and how they should move forward in a more democratic society. Because we're talking about the people and we're talking about the relationship between the ruler and the people. So if the ruler is so far away from the people, sooner or later that string that binds them together will just snap and that's pretty much it. You know, you don't have that relationship anymore.
Right, Syed, what about this, you know, the tricky question of reform, right? Who would want to change this? Because there will be always a rearguard reaction. You already suggested as much. You know, the royal houses in the abstract are used to anchor this idea of Ketuanan Melayu. Mm-hmm. And that's a notion that still is held and is powerful among some segments of society.
Malays, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what happens with that? I mean, can we actually move forward? Do you ever answer your question, regression or reform, in this wonderful
after,
little book?
After 25 years, did you
answer this question?
To a certain extent, I did. Because there is little reform that they bring about, you know? And there's a lot of regression in, especially regarding the attitude and actions both of both the rulers and the people towards the rulers. So this kind of attitude may not be of great help to bring about progress. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of democracy, of course, Well, we had occasions when, for instance, in 1993, where the ruler beat up a hockey coach, you know, and rising
Johor,
of that,
yeah.
Yeah, in Johor, and out of that, you had several controversies and also a resolution in Parliament. And of course, with that kind of resolution, and which enabled the court to try a ruler, a special court to try a ruler, that I think brought about some further progress.
Well, what about the question of leadership within the ranks of the royal house? Is that if somebody emerges among the royals to provide leadership, to talk about reform, about changing the relationship between the rakyat and the royal houses, do you think we could see progress?
It is possible. Yeah. It's possible. Even no, whatever you may say about the Johor rulers, you know, at least they talk to the people. They meet the people.
There's a kambara in Johor, which is happening every
well,
year.
Although sometimes the kambara is more to look at areas which can be taken up, you know, for their own development. But at the same time, there is a closeness. And I think this is what some Johor people feel about the rulers. They feel close to the rulers. You know? But one thing is that, you know, there is something hidden that may emerge at any time, which could have an adverse effect. And it is this. Most of the rulers in this country can be said to be not legitimate, because a number of them were set up by the British in Perak, in Selangor, in Terengganu, and even in Johor, for example.
But this was probably a long time ago.
Long time ago. The descendants, of course, there was a challenge in Johor, for instance. Unku Umar, a doctor, Dr. Unku Umar, he wanted to challenge the position of the ruler then. It was Sultan Ismail then. But he died of heart attack quite early, so the case just disappeared. And in Terengganu, there was some recent challenge, of course, of that position. No? So, in other words, if people become radicalized, then they'll question, no? And who are these rulers? Are they legitimate, you know, to be rulers? Or are they the ones put up by the British? You know, and if they are put up by the British, why have so many rulers? The British put up so many rulers. So the question would arise, as I've asked in the book, you know, if rulers are to be symbol of sovereignty or power, why have nine? Why not one? You know, you can ask that question.
Also a question, Sultan Nasruddin, when he was installed as the Sultan of Perak in 2015, said that rulers or the monarchy is not just ornaments, and they should not just be ornaments. They should play a role in also looking at how management of democracy can be done, of how good can be brought into the society. Moving forward, modernizing the institution itself, how long should that take? How long must that take? Because we're talking about reform and in a lot of the institutions in Malaysia. So if we were to modernize, or if we were to modernize the institution, what does it take? Who should play the leading role?
In the remaining minute that we have.
Yeah.
Do you think the reform is possible?
Basically, I think the conservative elements who are against reform are still very strong. But despite that, I still believe that reform is possible, because there will be economic and political changes that will drive the reform in society.
Okay,
you can't underestimate the political and economic roles.
Right, absolutely. Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much, Asai, for joining us this evening, and Rizal for being here as well. You've heard from Syed Hussein Ali. He is the author of The Malay Rulers, Regression and Reform. Of course, he's a well-known political activist. He's also a sociologist. He was a former senator. An amazing CV there behind this individual. Also joining me this evening was Rizal Zulkapli, senior editor at Astro Wani. You've been listening to Let's Talk with me, Sharad Kutan, every night at 10 p.m. only on Astro Wani.